All right, and we'll move to case number 5, Adams against Sam's Club Walmart. Mr. Faulkner?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Robert Faulkner. I represent the plaintiff below, who's the appellant herein. This is a Title VII discrimination case. Also has a pendant state law false imprisonment claim. And this matter is on appeal from entry of summary judgment against the plaintiff. There are some crucial facts that were before the district court that I'd like to point out. In June of 1999, the Sam's Club, owned by Walmart in Evansville, was managed by an individual named Dennis Teal. Ms. Adams, at that point, had worked there about 13 years and had consistently received favorable job evaluations. And there was an incident which led to Ms. Adams being fired on or about June 30th, 1999, in which there were 8 people in the break room. And one of the workers, Ditana Wilson, who also happens to be an African-American, ended up missing some money. It was about $12. of the people in the break room, only one person, a white employee named Monica Zijin, who had worked for Walmart for a few months, reported to Dennis Teal that Brenda Adams took the money.
So wasn't the context of this that actually Ms. Wilson initially complained that her money was missing, and then the store management undertook an investigation and was just talking to people, and at that point I guess Ms. DeJean may have also filed a statement of her own or a complaint of her own, but they conduct an investigation and rightly or wrongly come to the conclusion that Ms. Adams took the money. Now, if they genuinely believe that, isn't that inconsistent with a story under which they fire her for racially discriminatory reasons?
That's absolutely correct, but that's basically a different case. Ditana, in fact, did not know what happened to her money. She even had indicated to Brenda that she didn't think Brenda took it, to which I understand Mr. Teal said that was irrelevant what Ditana thought. But Monica, as I understand the record, had actually volunteered that she saw Brenda take the money.
And she wasn't aware that they were conducting an investigation?
She was aware that Ditana had ended up missing some money. And it was later that she came to Mr. Teal and reported that she thought that Brenda had taken it.
But maybe this is not right, but your opponent's brief says, after an unsuccessful attempt to locate the missing money, Wilson immediately reported the incident to her supervisor, cites Appendix 22 and 23 for that proposition. So I took that to mean that Wilson, in fact, did make some report of the fact that her money disappeared from the table.
I suspect she probably did, but it was later that Jean learned of this, and it was later that she volunteered that Brenda took the money. In other words, Ditana had not, she didn't know what happened. If you look at her statement, which has been designated part of the record, she did not know what happened to her money. And the only person who claims to have saw it was Ditana Wilson. But one other factor I'd want to point out to the court as well, if this were strictly a case where Dennis Teal was just some fellow we know nothing about as decision maker, then we wouldn't be here because it would strictly be a personnel decision, and we aren't in any way, shape, or form asking this court to, you know, play the super personnel department. But there is evidence in the record, which is uncontroverted, that Mr. Teal did, in fact, by his actions and the way he conducted himself with African American employees, harbored animus toward African Americans.
Let me ask you this before you get into that, because I'm aware of that evidence. There are about 5 points you make. Are there any specific incidents in which similarly situated white employees accused of theft were not terminated? Accused of theft, and then an investigation was done, and it was determined by Walmart that there was a theft, and that that person was the one that conducted it, and they were let go. Do you have any?
There was a white female who stole food about that time when Dennis Teal, the record shows, was store manager. The white female, it's on page 69 of, it's actually 92 of the appendix.
This is the eating the pudding
incident?
Yeah.
And if you have looked, Walmart's manual, which they're relying on, says that theft will not be tolerated, period. It doesn't distinguish between $12 and a bowl of pudding. So if you look at the manual that they're relying on its face, then they would have had to fire the white employee who stole the pudding, but they did not. And there was also an incident, Mark Timmy, who Ms. Adams testified about, was a supervisor who they believed had let merchandise go, and he was not discharged. And so basically, it's very telling that Walmart has designated no evidence to contradict Mr. Teal's acrimony and his disdain for African Americans. And so that's the factor that renders his decision to fire Adams suspicious. And there are other...
Well, that's the evidence that Judge Williams was just referring to. Where you call it uncontroverted, but the question—I'm not sure that it is uncontroverted. The evidence of Mr. Teal's particular animus against African Americans. Maybe you could explain why it is uncontroverted.
Well, Ms. Adams worked with Mr. Teal, had an opportunity to observe him on a daily basis. She observed how he interacted on a daily basis with African American employees. She observed and testified in her deposition under oath how he, the disparate way he acted. More favorably toward white employees than African American employees, and so it, in fact, is admissible under the federal rules of evidence as habit and routine because that was his habit to, in discussions with African Americans, to discount what they told him in favor of what white employees told him.
And like another thing I've listed is he threatened to fire blacks more than whites. He monitored blacks more when they were serving black customers. Was there any these threats and this monitoring, did this lead to any adverse outcome to any employee or any customer?
The evidence was designated to the court that Teal, through from January 1 of 99 through until this incident, fired four African Americans and one white, whereas the workforce is disproportionately white. So there is evidence from which the jury can infer that this, in fact, did lead to adverse employment action.
And were the details of those firings of African Americans part of the record? I don't.
I don't believe they were.
Okay.
Except there was the Remy Whitlock incident, which we talked about in the brief, mm-hmm. which was the sexual harassment where.
That I remembered. I just wondered if there was any reference to anything more specific on the four African Americans that were fired.
Other than that.
Okay.
If you'd like to save time for rebuttal, you may. Otherwise, you can use it now. You're into it, though.
The only other point I want to make is that we believe that Mr. Teal's conduct through his the way he conducts himself it constitutes direct evidence, and there's a district court case in the Northern District of Illinois where they said that even seemingly stray remarks by a decision maker can constitute direct evidence. And so that, with regard, we think that, and we've set forth in the brief, we've made put jury questions as to every element of the prima facie case, and that in fact, if the jury were to infer that Monica DeJean were lying, she would in fact be in violation of the policy against dishonesty. So we just think that the jury should have been presented these questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Faulkner. Ms. Zeller?
May it please the court, my name is Susan Zell and I represent the Appley Walmart Stores, Inc. in this matter. Walmart asked this court to affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment on plaintiff appellant Brenda Adams' claims of race discrimination and false imprisonment. Simply put, this is a case about an African-American employee who was terminated from Walmart for stealing money from another African-American employee. Following an investigation which revealed an eyewitness statement that Ms. Adams had in fact stolen money from the other African-American employee, store manager Dennis Teal decided to terminate Ms. Adams.
But I take it Mr. Faulkner's point is that the investigation itself is tainted, that Mr. Teal wasn't going to believe the word of any African-American in the course of looking into the facts, but instead is going to weight only the word, you know, somebody like Ms. DeJean, the white employees.
And I think one of the responses that I would have to that, Your Honor, is this. The investigation, as you know, the Lenore case, Lenore versus Roll Coder case, talks about the fact that a plaintiff or an appellant must do more than just challenge the thoroughness of an investigation in order to establish pretext.
Well, this isn't thoroughness. This is racial taint in the investigation. And, of course, if there is, you know, if every time he investigates, he just has a presumption that the African-American is wrong and the white person is right, I'm sure we would have a perfectly good case of race discrimination in termination, right?
Your Honor, we would. Unfortunately, for the plaintiff appellant in this case, we don't have that type of record evidence. And that's one of the major hurdles that plaintiff has not overcome. One of the questions that was posed to the appellant in this case was there specific descriptions of these type of incidents that are being alleged? And there's not. There are about four or five allegations that Ms. Adams makes in support of her assertion that Teal was tainted by racial discriminatory animus. One is, for example, that Teal failed to believe African-American employees when they gave a version of an event that had happened at the store. Another is that Teal ignored African-Americans. Another is that Teal monitored Ms. Adams more closely when an African-American was in her checkout counter. Another is that Mr. Teal scolded African-American employees more often. And another one is that he threatened to terminate African-American employees more often than Caucasians. Unfortunately for plaintiff appellant, and this is fatal to her claims, there have been no specific allegations made in support of this. These aren't the type of global assertions that can be relied upon to defeat a summary judgment motion. There is a lot of meaningful evidence that has not been provided in the record. For example, the names of these particular individuals who were threatened or who were scolded or who were terminated as a result of these allegations, whether Mr. Teal was even working there at the time that some of these employees were terminated.
What about monitoring her in her own checkout line? That certainly, we have the right person at least testifying there.
We do have the right person testifying, Your Honor. I would agree with that. However, we still don't have enough detail to meaningfully conclude that there was any discriminatory animus. For example, we don't know what particular incidents that Ms. Adams is alleging. For example, was there another reason perhaps that Mr. Teal would be monitoring that checkout line at that time? For example, had there are surveillance cameras in the store. Could, for example, someone have reported that this individual that was in her checkout line had been accused of theft or they thought that they picked up an item? We don't know how often this happened. There's no evidence as to how often it happened to other white employees. We don't know what the particular circumstances were, and there's no way in this situation that defendant, Walmart, could even be in a position to respond to that with such global assertions such as this. And courts have held, and this court has held on numerous occasions, that those aren't the type of allegations that can actually withstand a summary judgment motion. Ms. Adams would have to provide specific details supporting Mr. Teal's discriminatory animus, and that she has not done. The other thing that I think I would relate to the court along those lines is plaintiff appellant is making the assertion that first this is direct evidence of discrimination, and that if it is not in fact direct evidence of discrimination, then it's certainly evidence of pretext. On the direct evidence front, I would note that the law is very clear on direct evidence that it has to be evidence which, if it is believed by the trier of fact, can establish discriminatory animus without reliance on inference or presumption. And as this court can see, none of these allegations that Ms. Adams is making even relate to her termination. So there's no way that we could take this and determine without inference or presumption that that's direct evidence of racial discrimination.
I wonder if you could talk about the false imprisonment claim for a moment. She seems pretty clearly in her deposition to be saying that she was locked in that room She saw somebody have to use a key to enter it. Shouldn't we, at this stage of the game, taking the facts in the light most favorable to the opponent of the motion, say, okay, she was locked in the room. Maybe, you know, upon further testimony from somebody else's side, it would prove it turned out that she wasn't. But being locked in a room for 5 minutes is, why is that so trivial?
Well, Your Honor, I think there are three separate reasons that the false imprisonment claim fails. First, I think that the district court properly noticed that there really isn't evidence that she was, in fact, restrained. I realize, looking at the pages of her deposition, which are pages 86 and 87 of the record, I think it's important to note that what Ms. Adams does testify to unequivocally is that she tried to open the door and that she couldn't, and after that, that she sat back down. She also testified, however, that she was unclear as to whether this was the type of door that could be unlocked from the inside. So, Ms.
But she does say, I couldn't get out. I'm looking at the reply brief, page 9. I mean, what? Suppose we take the facts in the light most favorable to her and say she was locked in the room. What right do they have to lock her up inside of a room?
Well, and again, I wouldn't assume, based on this record testimony, that she was, in fact, locked in the room, because I think she has testified she doesn't know whether she could unlock the door or not from the inside. And then the testimony from the Walmart individual who submitted an affidavit stated that, in fact, the door wasn't locked and couldn't be locked from that side. So you have a dispute there. But even assuming that she had been locked in the room for 3 to 5 minutes, it has to be a meaningful restraint. And I think one thing that it's important to remember is Ms. Adams wasn't trying to leave the building. She wasn't trying to even leave Mr. Teal's office permanently. What had happened here is she was asked to voluntarily come down to the store to discuss theft allegations that were made against her. She did voluntarily come to the store. She voluntarily came into Teal's office. At no time did anyone tell her that she couldn't leave the office, and at no time did anyone tell her that she could not leave the premises. All she was trying to do is, after she had completed a statement, she was trying to open the door to go to the restroom. There's no evidence that she was trying to leave the store or leave the office or leave the meeting. She was merely trying to go use the restroom in return. And as I mentioned before, she admits that she doesn't even know if the door was unlocked. And when she tried to unlock the door and couldn't get out, she sat back down. So that's not a meaningful restraint on her freedom of movement against her will.
So your position would be she'd have to knock on the door and say, can somebody unlock this door or let me out, and then get someone that says no, I'm not going to, for it to be false imprisonment. It has to go.
I do think that she would have to do more than she did here, Your Honor. And I think that the other thing which you've touched upon here is false imprisonment cases, if you look at the Restatement Second of Tort states, that to state a false imprisonment claim, the defendant must intend to restrain someone and confine someone. And there's no evidence in the record that Walmart ever intended to detain her in this office. In fact, it's undisputed that no one told her she couldn't leave, that they did not believe the door was locked. And if you look at all of the Indiana cases that have talked about false imprisonment, intent is present in all of those cases. I think that's what distinguishes the case that we have here today, is there is no intent to confine her in the room. The other thing that I think that you'll notice if you look at the Indiana case law on these issues is there have been several cases where when a detention is for such a minor period of time, 3 to 5 minutes or less, the courts have held that that's a reasonable restraint for a reasonable purpose. There was a Northern District of Indiana case, the Oliver case, in which students were detained in a locker room for a search for approximately, it actually doesn't give a specific period of time, but there was a strip search involved when another student had been accused of stealing some money. And in that case, they held that there was no false imprisonment because it was a reasonable period of time and there was no unlawful restraint of those individuals. And I think you have the same circumstance here. You have a very brief period of time, 3 to 5 minutes, in which if this court were to find that Ms. Adams was detained, that she was unable to leave. One other issue that I did want to touch upon, Your Honors, the question was posed during the opening argument of the appellant as to whether there was any evidence of similarly situated non-African-American employees who received more favorable treatment than Ms. Adams. And there were several pointed out in Ms. Adams' brief. I want to briefly address a few of them. One is an employee that was referenced by plaintiff appellant as eating some pudding and not being terminated. If Your Honors would refer to the record on that case, page 92, it clearly states that this occurred approximately a year before Ms. Adams' termination. a year before Ms. Adams' termination, Mr. Teal was not even the store manager at the time. And that's also in the record as well, Your Honor. If I may briefly conclude.
Okay, sure.
Your Honor, because the evidence in this case does not support a finding of direct or indirect discrimination, and there's no evidence that there was an intentional unlawful restraint of Ms. Adams' freedom of movement, we would request that this court affirm the grant of summary judgment by the district court. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Faulkner? All right. A minute and change.
Real quick, Your Honor. If there were compelling reasons why Mr. Teal watched Brenda Adams or others more closely, they could have filed an affidavit. He was their employee, but instead we heard nothing from Mr. Teal. So we think that's a fact from which the jury can infer that there was, in fact, racial animus. And in fact, as far as challenging the thoroughness of the investigation, that's not what's at issue here. What's at issue here is whether it was tainted by Mr. Teal's predisposed disposition to find an African American had in fact been dishonest or committed theft. In fact, Walmart's never filed an affidavit of Monica DeJean either. The only affidavit that they filed was of Mr. Dabbs, who was all he knows is he happened on the scene after the fact. And of all the major parties, Brenda Adams is the only person that's committed herself to oath under oath to these events. And regard to the false imprisonment, the cases do not stand for the proposition that you can lock your employees in a room for so long as it's not too long. And in fact, the cases, as we pointed out in our brief, are clearly distinguishable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Zeller. We will take the case under advisement.